Hey y'all, welcome to my podcast. Grab that cup of coffee or that glass of wine and let's talk about women. It's been 100 years since women gained the right to vote. So where are we now? Today, we're going to address some of the issues that women are still facing. With the election coming up, we're going to talk about the fact that a woman is still not being elected and why that is. But first, before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about suffrage. It took 72 years to establish women's right to vote. 72 years of hard work and heartache. Letters were written to husbands, fathers, sons, political leaders, etc. Long before suffrage began, Abigail Adams wrote a letter to her husband. Listen to Abigail Adams' words to John Adams in March of 1776. "I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And by the way, in the new code of law, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion, and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation." And she was right. 150 years before the 19th Amendment was ratified, she was onto something. She was right in the sense that why would members of society be subject to the laws of the country if they have no right to vote on them? It is important to note that there were more reasons why people were against ratifying the 19th Amendment other than just being anti-women's rights. This was after the Civil War, so many Southern states were tired of the federal government telling them what to do. Issues such as prohibition and the railroad were reason enough to be anti-suffrage. Many feared that women would keep prohibition in place forever. Railroads made more money delivering alcohol, so of course this was a concerning issue. In order for this amendment to be ratified, 3/4 of the U.S. had to vote pro-suffrage. People went to the House in red and white roses, red for anti and white for pro. The last needed state to vote pro was Tennessee. Harry Byrne wore his red rose going into the House that day, but he had a letter in his pocket that he read time and time again that urged him to think of his mother. He changed his mind that day and voted pro, and the United States got the perfect 36. When talking about suffrage, we often think about the Seneca Falls Convention, which was actually the impetus for the suffrage movement. This convention was held in 1848, and the 19th Amendment was not ratified until 1920, giving women the right to vote. 72 years, a lifetime of suffrage, and 40 consecutive sessions of Congress to get this amendment ratified. While getting the right to vote was a step in the right direction, there were still many issues that needed to be addressed. Issues such as equality, discrimination, women in the workforce, women in politics, etc. So in 1923, Alice Paul, part of the Women's Political Party, was the first to introduce the ERA. The ERA is to protect women's equality and to prevent discrimination based on sex. That being said, 80% of Americans, 80% of the people in the United States, think that women and men are guaranteed equal rights in the U.S. Constitution. That's not exactly true. The 14th Amendment was put into place to protect race, religion, national origin, and the part that is created for gender offers far less protection to women than the other part of the 14th Amendment. So in 1972, Congress passed the ERA. Congress sent it to the states to be ratified, which means 38 out of the 50 states, 3/4 of the states, had to ratify the ERA for it to become part of the U.S. Constitution. The deadline was 1982, and only 35 states ratified this. So it did not get put into the Constitution. Now, states are still trying to ratify the ERA. In 2017, Nevada was the first to ratify the ERA in 40 something years. I think it's like 45 or something. And but that being said, I'm part of an organization in South Carolina called the South Carolina Generation Ratifiers, and we write letters to legislators and other organizations to try to get South Carolina to ratify the ERA. That being said, if you go to school in South Carolina, you can DM me on Instagram and be a part of this as well. Or if you're from my home state, Alabama, I'm hoping to get some people together, volunteers, to write these letters in Alabama. So if you're interested in that, you can go ahead and DM me on Instagram as well, but we will talk about that at the end of this podcast. Hopefully with the ERA, if it ever gets passed, it will close the gender pay gap. According to the AAUW's wage gap analysis, the gender gap is not expected to close until 2093, which means most of us listening to this podcast will not live to see that day. In 1963, the Equal Pay Act was enacted into law. This meant that there could not be wage disparity based on sex. This allowed for exceptions to be made, such as seniority, merit, and productivity. These exceptions gave a way for the gender pay gap to still exist. So, it does still exist. The solutions are not really black and white. If the solution was that simple, then it would not take nearly 100 years to close this gap. So let's talk about some of the biggest challenges, and let's offer some solutions to these challenges in hopes to close this gap so that one day we will actually see it closed. Before there can be policy change, there needs to be a societal shift. Women have proven over and over again that they are competent and qualified to work in some of the highest and most well-respected occupations. Some solutions to the gap rely on women to negotiate their salaries, sit at the table, be more confident in the work they've accomplished, and not taking their foot off the gas. However, it is true that men seek to negotiate higher salaries more often than women, but the problem is when women do negotiate their salaries, they're seen as less likable than their male counterparts. Not only is there a discrepancy in pay in the occupations between men and women, but did you know that with the influx of women becoming lawyers, the status of this occupation is decreasing, as well as the pay? This is also true in other professions such as veterinary medicine, where there's a large amount of women that come in that occupation or come into that workforce. Many of the challenges that are preventing the gap to close are societal issues. In order to create a shift in society, there needs to be more women candidates and more women in offices at both the state and national levels. There needs to be a demand for change. When women continue to keep their foot on the gas, they demand this change. When women sit at the table and do not leave until they have to leave, this is what demand for change looks like. Instead of sitting back because you're thinking about having a kid or it's being discussed or whatever, women need to jump for promotions and opportunities, and this will start a slow change in society. Let's talk a little bit about why we still aren't electing women into office. Let's start with gender roles. This is a broad topic that we do not have time to completely cover today, but we are going to narrow it down to gender stereotyping. Let's talk about how these gender roles and how gender stereotyping might have gotten the vote but are not winning the election. Some of the main concerns regarding women being president that I've heard are women are too emotional, they couldn't possibly be commander-in-chief. A woman candidate must present masculine traits to earn respect, but if she does, then she also has to present herself as feminine because it makes people too uncomfortable if she's too masculine. This is where gender roles come in. The public wants to see a woman that is maternal and nurturing because that fits her gender role. Oftentimes, when seeing women candidates for any election, we see a long list of how she's qualified, but then we see a sneak peek into her family-loving, nurturing side. We recently saw that there were more women in this race than any other race we've seen so far. We as girls were told by our parents that we could be anything we wanted to be, even president. But now as women, are we told the same thing? Not exactly. Today, all women candidates are out of the race for presidency. While this is disheartening news to hear, but not unprecedented, the question arises, does electing women matter? I think yes. Electing more women in legislation could improve more women-friendly policies, such as healthcare, education, domestic violence issues, etc. Not all women have to be on the same political side for women's representation to matter necessarily. The numbers of women represented are helpful in itself for women to be seen as an equal counterpart to men. While I'm not disagreeing that it would be more helpful for women and men alike to push more women-friendly policies, electing women, regardless of party or policy, is helpful in reforming a male-dominated society. Whether or not women can push their agendas in legislation is often more complicated than just their personal position. Other factors prevent these policies, such as budget restrictions, public opinion, interest groups, etc. The study published in 2009, linking women's descriptive and substantive representation in the United States, concluded that women's description and substantive representation were in fact linked, backing up my argument. The argument that women in office does matter regardless of political party. It is also important to note that electing women of color is also critical. Symbolic representation is important to voters. Recognizing someone that has gone through similar lifestyle as a voter is important, whether it be race, gender, socioeconomic background, etc. While symbolic representation does not target all voters, it helps in creating a more balanced democracy, where people see themselves and their interest in their leaders. Women and men are both equally qualified to run office, but it is important for there to be a more equal representation in both state and national levels. Women often have different policy agendas than men. While men can still share their policy agendas, descriptive and symbolic representation remains critical. Another important issue to address when talking about women's issues is the motherhood penalty. The motherhood penalty can also be linked to gender equality and birth rates. In the United States, our birth rates are decreasing. In the United States, more women are becoming more educated and with more job opportunities. With this comes the decline in birth rate. If educated women in the United States decide to have a child, it is usually at an older age. When educated women spend their 20s building their resumes and over-preparing for their jobs, this limits them to a smaller window for childbearing. That being said, when talking about the motherhood penalty, let's talk about when you're applying for a job. A man will put on a wedding ring and is seen as more stable and a better applicant for the job. If you walk into a job as a woman and have your wedding ring on, they assume children, they assume leave, and you may or may not get the job. Or if you do, you might be at a lesser position than what you are qualified for. So oftentimes, women go into a job interview without their rings, whereas men put them on. While more educated women are having to wait to have a child due to fear that they will not be able to get their desired job, has everything to do with policy. Equal pay is just the beginning of this problem. Women are already paid less. The fear of being penalized for being mothers after years of education and hard work are just not worth the risk. If there were more policies to change this pay discrepancy, preferably before 2093, then this would help increase birth rates. Additionally, policies giving more men child leave will create a more equal culture in the United States in terms of cultural change. It would also be the men's responsibility to take this leave without penalty for it to be normalized. With the mention of maternity and paternity leave, let's talk about family leave. The Clinton administration enacted a bill that required companies to give employees 12 weeks of unpaid family leave. While this is helpful, many people cannot afford to take 12 weeks of unpaid leave. I feel like 12 weeks of paid family leave would help mothers, fathers, would basically help everyone. And hopefully this would eliminate some of the motherhood penalty in the hopes that women would take these weeks or some of these weeks to care for their child without having the penalty at work. And if everyone took their leave when they needed to, then there would not necessarily be a penalty. We don't have time today, but I encourage you, if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested in family leave and paid family leave, go to YouTube and look up some of these women's stories that might have suffered from cancer, or their child was sick, or their mothers or fathers were sick, and they might be single parents. Look at some of the benefits that paid family leave would give them, and they're really emotional stories, and I encourage you to watch. Okay, so we covered a lot of issues in this podcast today. A lot of them we did not go into detail, so I encourage you, if you were confused about anything, to definitely look them up, or if you're even just a little bit interested in learning a little bit more, I encourage you to read and look up some of this material, because it is really important stuff. And I feel like if more people are educated on these issues, then that is also a step in the right direction to close the pay gap, to have more equality for women. And I think it's really important, so I encourage you to do so. As I mentioned earlier, I am part of the South Carolina Generation Ratifiers. If you live in South Carolina or you go to College of Charleston and want to be more involved, please DM me on Instagram. My Instagram is Carolanne, CAROLANNE, _ Walker. And if you are from my home state, Alabama, and need something on your resume, or you're really interested, I want to start a group in Alabama as well, sending letters to legislators, encouraging them to ratify the ERA. So if you're interested in that, you can also DM me on my Instagram. Just trying to get some more volunteers for both organizations, because I think ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment will really help some of these issues that I mentioned in this podcast. Also, if you want to learn more information on some of the things that I covered, I will post in the description some of the sources that I used in making this podcast, for facts, etc. That there's going to be more information there, but we just don't have time to cover everything in this podcast today. But I hope you enjoyed it. Bye.